Welcome to the Social Currency Podcast with digital marketing experts Jess Jensen and Tuck Ross. With a combined 3 decades of experience, they'll share thoughts on marketing, digital strategy, and social media to get you current quick. Looking to understand Google Analytics or how to optimize CPC? You're in the wrong place. This podcast drives discussion on digital and social strategy and their fundamental role in building your business strategy. In 30 minutes a week, we'll arm you with key talking points to speak with authority and confidence. Now, let's build your social currency.
Welcome back to the Social Currency Marketing Podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jess Jensen, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Tuck Ross. How are you, Tuck?
I'm great, Jess. Thanks for asking. Last time, you guys know we covered the second part of WTF is Up with LinkedIn. If you haven't had a chance to listen, curious about what people are finding value on LinkedIn, go check it out. We're actually reading feedback from a video that I posted, received a ton of response. Pretty fun episode, so check it out.
Yep. So today's episode is part one of KPI to your ROI. And we are talking about social media measurement and how that really matters to your business. So we are tackling numbers. Those of you that are numbers people, you're going to love the next two episodes. We're talking about the most important KPIs, key performance indicators, to really define success in both digital and social media. One of my favorite sayings is measure everything and you'll understand nothing. And we know we aren't alone in this. There are too many ways to measure effectiveness of digital marketing. So today and in the following episode, we want to tackle that and really break down what measurement and what KPIs should really matter to you based on the framework of your business. But first, the news.
The news. All right. Jess, have you heard this? Google Plus. Closing doors, shutting down.
Crazy.
Closing up. It's like Toys R Us or something else. That's
Kmart.
But it's Kmart. Oh, I loved Kmart.
Blue Light
My
Special.
My mom always shopped at Kmart for me.
Same.
I already thought Google Plus was gone. I actually can't believe this is news.
Yes.
You guys realize, like, go back. This was launched in 2011, and I think it was kind of cool at the start. I remember playing around. I spent, like, a couple weeks trying to figure out, you know, can I invite friends to this? It's cool because it's all built in. Everybody has Gmail. This is going to be the new thing. And yet, you know, it just didn't seem to have that flavor that Facebook and, well, candidly, MySpace and some of the other ones had. But you know, it's gone now. I'm not sad, actually. I was going to say I'm sad. I'm not sad. I actually really find Google Plus this interesting beast that it's been around for so long. No one is using it. And yet, I still run into agencies, even last week, that are pitching me that they have Google Plus as part of their capability set. And I literally asked them, Google Plus? I cannot accept an agency that pitches me that they have Google Plus as the third social network on their capability set. It really just points to the relevance, because this is really like WTF is up with Google. And what are they doing with this thing still hanging out there like a sore thumb or something that's hanging out there kind of awkwardly, right? It's bizarre. I think they should buy Twitter. I really think they should buy Twitter already, because that would be a much better play. If you look at kind of where, especially the more mature, larger, like Facebook, are really seeing growth with Instagram, Google would be a really smart play to buy a social network. And they clearly, in the last 7 years, have not been able to grow one from scratch. I actually thought this was pretty interesting that it came out that they actually had a security issue in Google Plus that potentially exposed millions of us who are Google users to our personal data being exposed. But they didn't share that. This was actually months back. They didn't share that until now, because they found out that actually it may not have happened, but they're not totally sure. But they didn't want to get in trouble, so they didn't share it back in whatever month it happened. So now they're just going to be
sketchy.
Like, you know what, we'll close Google Plus, because, I mean, you know, why not? There's nothing else we're doing with it. But, you know, there it is.
Yeah.
The interesting thing to me here is that it's going to be still live for business. So personal story here is that at my last place, we fought hard as a social team against the implementation of Google Plus for business across the board as the internal social network. trying to treat it a little bit like Slack. Mm. So businesses use Slack, they use Chatter for Salesforce. They've got these different tools to keep people connected.
Yammer.
This business, yeah, absolutely chose to use Google Plus. And we said, hey, by the way, this is a dead social network. No one's using this. It will go away. Probably a bad idea to adopt this as the global solution for connecting all employees.
Yep.
And yet it moved forward. And yet now, 2 years later, Google's officially saying it's going away, except not for business. So maybe that'll still exist for businesses that have this, but probably time to switch gears on that if that's your thing, because the fact that it's going away on the consumer side means that there's really no product development happening for it. It's going to go away. And Google just has no focus on it. So
yep.
It just really won't die. And I kind of wish that it happened sooner, but here we go. Google Plus. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Great thinking. And I'm curious to ask down the road, our friends at Twitter, about your idea of acquisition. I mean, that's a fair point. Google is a behemoth, obviously, as a company. So, you know, maybe this was a misstep or an experiment that didn't quite go right, but doesn't mean that they don't have a lot of positivity ahead of them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. So let's get into ROI.
Yeah. So part one of our measurement discussion, this is a big one. So first and foremost, your business strategy needs to be set first. And really that should be your North Star. And from there, you can define what you're looking to do in the digital marketing spaces and build that approach based on that strategy. So that's number one, business strategy first, then marketing follows. And out of marketing, obviously, one big discipline is digital. So the way you're using digital and social media in your broader marketing mix should just be a derivative of what you're looking to do overall in your business. Again, there's really no other way to say that. So if there's lack of clarity on the business side, you're going to struggle with digital measurement. So that's number one. And so strategies and approaches are going to differ significantly based on the category of business that you're in. But if you're using digital channels to be a major contributor to your business and you're hoping that they're really helping to drive those business metrics, you need to have a consistent set of metrics. And, you know, piece of this is really education, helping your business leaders, the business unit owners, your GMs understand what success looks like from a digital standpoint. So even if platforms change, which we know that they do per your discussion on Google Plus, algorithms change, which we know they do. We've seen that happen multiple times with organic reach plummeting on places like Facebook. Or you shift strategies, right? That happens all the time. Budget gets cut. There's a new competitive landscape to deal with. All kinds of factors can come up which could actually alter the strategy. And your digital marketing metrics will have to adjust. But the more upfront education and consistency you've built in, the more malleable you'll be able to be. So a big part of your marketing strategy is likely going to be digital. Consumers and businesses alike are always online and on their phone. And, you know, I just shared a tweet earlier today that was about Gen Z and this notion of marketing for them is digital. Like there's no differentiation. You know, it's just, their lives are, they're born and raised in the digital spaces. And so this idea that there's only certain kinds of brands that are spending money and time here is going to go by the wayside, if not already.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, we've talked about this before. It's all about spending time where your consumer has attention. And this is really in digital spaces, especially in social spaces. We hear the stats that you check your phone 150, 200 times a day. They're talking about cell phone addiction. iOS just released screen time controls. Google's had it for a little bit. Amazon's had it for a while to be able to limit the screen time that your kids have on a device. It's really thinking about, you know, the fact that that's a reaction to the fact that people have so much attention in digital, in social, and that's where businesses want to have their time and attention. If you're not, then you're missing out. And for me, when I'm in digital space, I'm building a list of KPIs for a strategy. I really refer to the marketing funnel. It's the almighty marketing funnel. I set all my tracking against it. And the marketing funnel is really that system that helps track the stages consumers or your purchasers travel through to eventually make that buying decision that you want. And so if we go down what the marketing funnel is, the stages really are starting at the top, and literally picture this as a funnel. If you haven't seen one, I mean, it's just literally like a visual funnel. And think about the biggest group at the top. awareness. And this is when a consumer first hears or learns about you and they move down into consideration. That's when the consumer adds you to their brain and they wonder, are you the right one? Are you the one for me?
It's like the dating equivalent of marketing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny you say that because this is very much thinking about how do you build a relationship with someone that wants to last over time. And we get very specific with the metrics about it. But if you think about the metrics of a relationship, it's, did they call me back? Did they, you know, did they do this? Did they do that? And there's these different tracking mechanisms that we all use mentally that this is very much like that, to your point, is that it's a little bit like dating that consumer and wanting to get to the point where, you know, you make a commitment. So when the consumer chooses you, that's preference, makes that decision. And then the action is the actual conversion point that you've been looking for. When the purchase is made, your action is taken. So in a relationship, maybe it's you get engaged, you get married. For a business, that's a little bit lighter. Maybe it's a purchase, depending on the category. That could be a big decision. It could be a little decision. Loyalty is when that conversion and the surrounding experience of your brand, product, service encourages them to stick with you over time. And so we hear about luxury brands or brands that have a very premium presence. They have a good experience around the product and people desire their products because there's such prestige with that. That is driving that loyalty. And then I think the ultimate one after that is advocacy, where they like you enough to tell someone else, which by the way, starts again back at the top to create awareness. And yeah, that is really kind of a basic marketing funnel. There's other added elements you can add in, like repurchase and reuse. You can look at things like lifetime value, which include all of those together and then what they're ultimately driving back to you as they continue to move through the funnel. And then tenure is part of loyalty, how long they're staying with a brand and purchasing with you. Or, you know, you can kind of look at different consumer metrics to get a larger picture. But overall, thinking about what do you want to track, to what you were saying, as part of this pre-awareness all the way through to the end point of advocacy, whether they don't know about you, and evaluating how do you drive the best customers or the most efficient customers with the least loss at every stage of that funnel.
Mm-hmm. So there's really like six steps. It's pretty robust.
It is. And there's actually multiple metrics per step that we can all cover. But actually, you know, I think this is pretty exciting because it gives us so many points to talk and think about. What is our consumer doing? How is their behavior changing? How do we look at them at each stage and determine what is going to interest them and keep them in the mix in that funnel at every point? As a side note, just because we're saying there's so many platform specific metrics that you and I are going to hit on a broad set here, but there's so many more available as you go into refined campaigns. So based on that, Jess, where do we start?
Yeah. And I just wanted to add, I think the other thing that's important to recognize about the funnel, and it does help so much to have a visual, and maybe we'll put this into a blog post for folks that are listening. But the reason it's the shape of a funnel is because when you start out at the top with awareness, that's the largest population. Right. And as you move people into things like preference and then loyalty and, of course, advocacy, which is basically word of mouth, like free marketing, you can just like a funnel, it gets to be a smaller and smaller and smaller sample of that population. So that's everything to take into consideration. You go from kind of a quantity play to a quality play as you move down that funnel shape. Cool. So, again, strategy should come from having clear goals. That's number one. And that should be driven out of the business. So marketing, again, is really at the service of the business and should ultimately be helping to drive business results. So when we start to try to connect the dots between some of the marketing language, we think about, you know, I want lots of people to see this. So that's that awareness discussion at the top of the funnel. That's going to be words like reach, right? You can buy reach when you think about paid media. It's getting your content or your message out to a wide berth of people. Then there's, I want people to see this many, many times. And that's often impressions, right? So impressions is not just the number of people that saw it, but the number of people that saw it times the number of times they saw it. And that's just human nature. Lots of us see something once and it floats by. You have to see it 2, 3, 4, 5 times before it actually really starts to penetrate and sink in. So that often is an impression goal when you think about creating content and buying paid digital media. Another one that often comes up, which we talked about in past episodes, is engagement. So buying or creating content that is rooted in, I want engagement on this. And that is often when you want people to take an action. So you can kind of start to see how this parallels that funnel moving closer and closer to the bottom. Folks have to obviously be aware, and you have to use reach to get them aware. Then they often have to see something a few different times for it to actually penetrate into their brain. And then they might start to take an action or engage with your content.
Yeah, that's a good illustration. And it goes to show that these different metrics can also work together, and you want to look at them cohesively, not just in a vacuum, because they do complement each other. And so, for example, like you said, engagement can help increase reach and impressions when people interact with your content as a signal to especially the platform algorithms that people are interested in your content. And they judge, the platforms judge, by the type of profile, velocity of engagement, distance from time to post to engagement, etc., which is why you want to start caring about these metrics in aggregate, because they do work together in that way to show how your content is moving in this case, and or how people are engaging with you as a brand overall. So engagements are really a sign that your content's resonating, interesting, and compelling from that perspective. And since all these are action points, they can count as conversions, depending on how you define that, depending on what your goal is.
Yep, that's right. So your goal should be to lead to a conversion. And conversion can mean lots of different things. So one common conversion is clicking on a link in a social post, or really in any digital content, a banner ad, a pre-roll that leads to a website. So just clicking on a link. This can be a link that takes you to the company's website. It could be a blog post to learn more. It could be a podcast, right? So that link could go wherever. It could be a retailer, an e-commerce platform. But that's often considered like a traditional conversion, is clicking on a link. And obviously keeping track of your conversions throughout that marketing funnel is important to understand the efficacy and the value of your efforts. I know it can mean other things, though. Tell me about some of the other ways that we can define a conversion.
Yeah, I mean, it can mean an email sign up. It can mean a sign up for a webinar. It can mean an e-commerce transaction. It can mean a form fill for a salesperson to contact you, like a lead generation option. Or it can mean a download of a white paper, which could be similar to related to that. Or you want a specific mention on the fact that you have white papers plus the leads that went with it. You can mean a referral to an online retailer. Conversion can really mean lots of things. And it's ultimately depending on your business. Leads, sales, downloads, whatever you're looking for, especially as part of that campaign, and then all of your campaigns together. When you look at that, how is it assisting your marketing funnel? And when I look at the marketing funnel, I like to have conversion points for every step of the consumer journey, even multiple per stage, because to your point, Jess, you can understand the efficiency. You can check the pain points in the consumer experience. You can inform how to modify your strategy and then evaluate the throughput on a percentage basis of each stage over the last to build comparisons. And maybe that gets your funnel to this really beautiful rectangle, where maybe there, you know, it doesn't kind of winnow into a triangle at the bottom, that you just kind of have 100% throughput. But ultimately you decide, that would be beautiful. But ultimately you decide, having a specific set of goals guides your KPIs.
Yep. And one of my favorite sayings is to begin with the end in mind. And I think that's critical here. Reverse engineer out of your core objective. So a huge advantage here is it gives you a map on where you want to have tracking in place to structure what we often call an attribution model. That's a fancy way of saying, how do I organize the marketing efforts that I'm taking so that it is docked into corollary spend, and how that's docked into the business. So the tighter your attribution model, the more likely the business is going to see marketing as being valuable. And one of the ways you can do that is through things like link tracking, like you were just talking about, adding pixels. So we're getting, again, a little bit geeky here, but you can add pixels so that basically each URL is a unique one. And when you're using different areas of digital marketing, you can understand which of them were more effective. You can even look at this from a creative perspective as well. one of the areas that we've just begun to utilize Pixeline, in my experience, is with some of our social influencer work. So some of the stuff that we talked about with David Kogan a few episodes back, we can look at social influencers as a body compared to other forms of digital marketing in our mix, or we can even look at individual social influencers compared to one another, who's driving the most qualified traffic, getting the most engagement, basically the most efficient use of our spend, and perhaps someone that we want to partner with again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is the beauty of digital media, right? Everything is trackable. And the trick is really creating this 360 attribution where you initiate some type of effort, maybe an external platform, track that through to your platform, and do that closed loop attribution via the pixel or whatever else you're using to connect the dots on the other side. Ultimately, you need a few tools to be able to see all of it, but having a thought process ahead of time and then figuring that out after the fact is very important. So go back to your consumer journey. Think about the marketing funnel as your consumer journey. What stages are they moving through? What are they thinking about as they go through that process? And based on the conversions per stage, what behavior could your consumer exhibit at each stage? So example, if you send an email and they share that email through forwarding it, do you have tracking in place to follow that path? So an action by the second consumer who receives that email, are they looking like that first consumer because that first consumer forwarded it, or are they actually being tracked as a separate consumer, a new consumer that's new to your brand that doesn't have a subscription to your email list, which is interesting to kind of think about. But sometimes there's a lot of loss that happens in our systems where something else moves through the system and it's being tracked as an individual unique, whereas that link may only be associated to the first person, where there's a second, third, fourth person that's actioning off of that individual link. We talked about dark social in our jargon episodes a while back, but tracking in social can get muddy like this very quickly if there's not a smart tracking strategy in place to capture the majority of consumer effort in social that may have a loss in tracking. And that's thinking about where the spaces where consumers may be quoting you or taking pieces of an article that you wrote in a blog post or sharing different things like an image that come across their way, reposting it, and then you lose that. And do you have visual recognition tools? Do you have brand mention tools? Do you have listening on to be able to pick that up? Another topic that's important here is being mindful of what your audience actually wants to do. Often they want to stay where they are. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, yep. It can take a lot of pull to get them off of that environment. And that's natural, right? You think about all of us that we want to go to our social channels. We want to immerse ourselves and get into the feed and see what our friends are saying and engage with that. It's really hard to jump in with an advertisement for, soap. And all of a sudden you'd be like, I don't want to look at that right now. I want to keep going with what I have right here. Why would I leave and go to this website to make a purchase? And so it can really take a lot. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get people out of those platforms. And, you know, take example, Twitter. For example, I've never had success with a media campaign about getting people out of Twitter. Twitter media buy is working really well for retweets, engagements, driving within the platform. But to move people out of Twitter is very difficult. And so How do you think about this, Jess? How do you think about when we actually want to create conversions that are maybe into our owned platforms, the platforms that we're trying to get actions on? How have you tackled this?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And just in my recent experience, we have seen the best performance on the what we're using the term conversion. So taking them outside of the social platform onto, say, a traditional.com environment. We've seen that on Facebook. People are more willing to leave. And I don't know the why. I could just speculate. You know, it might just be something along the lines of the environments that are more immersive. So Instagram comes to mind.
Immersive
environments sort of kind of keep you warm and cozy and you kind of don't want to go. Whereas perhaps Facebook has enough going on already that maybe it's starting to feel like it's a media platform, you know, and you're okay clicking out. I don't know. That's sort of just armchair psychology. But I think the notion of repetition is critical. I think about my own personal behavior on Instagram. And that's where I've said before in past episodes, I'm the most receptive actually to responding to ads. And I think it is because A, they're God, I don't know how, but they're perfectly catered to me more than any other platform in terms of what I would actually buy. So good job, Instagram/Facebook. But it's actually way better on Instagram than Facebook. So even though it's the same back end, I can't quite figure that out because Instagram is much more catered and curated to me. But I still have to see it like 5 or 6 times. I really do. And I'm really hesitant to click out on the paid, on any paid ads on social platforms without seeing it a few times. So I think some of the ways you can get around that is showing them a taste of what they'll get on the platform if they do click out a taste of what they're going to get if they leave the platform onto a .com environment. So, you know, one of the things that I've seen with podcasts specifically is sharing out kind of a short 10 to 15 second soundbite on Twitter and giving people a sense of what they might hear if they go ahead and listen to the whole thing. We see this with, you know,
we should totally do that, by the way.
Yes, we should. Can you
such a good idea.
Can you get on that right away? Check. Right. Add it to our list. But no, I mean, we see a video. We've been seeing that for years, right? Like, you know, 5, 10, 15 second cuts of a 3-minute video. And that runs, whether it's pre-roll on YouTube or on social, because it gives you a sense of the value that you'll get when you leave the environment. So one of my good friends who's a journalist uses the famous saying, I think in journalism, don't bury the lead. And I love that. Your content, copy, headline, be very clear about why they should care and why they're willing to jump off the current environment to go where you want them to go.
Yeah. I mean, that offer of value definitely needs to be tempting enough to get out there. And the things you just said, I think about the funnel, right? And you've got frequency of impression when you say, I have to see it 5 or 6 times. And that's a metric that we need to be thinking about, that a consumer may need to see things multiple times. So you think about your reach as unique one time, right? But how many times are they seeing the impressions? How many times are they getting to that one click after those number of impressions? That's how we start to think about building this funnel into the stack and looking at the metrics in aggregate versus on the silo. And, you know, to your point about not bearing the lead, I love that. My mantra has always been, go to your consumer. Don't force them to come to you. And there's always been this really big, you know, piece of a brand that is arrogant in some ways, where brands feel like they have to always get them to them. And there's really a different mindset now where consumers that exist on social platforms, they go there first. They don't come to you first necessarily. They may hear about you there. They may think about you and say, oh, you know what? I need this, and come to you. But most of their day, most of their attention is spent elsewhere. And so if they're there, that's where you need to go. Go to your consumer. That's where the attention is. Don't force them to come to you. Follow them. Don't hope that if you build it, they will come. So, you know, it's really thinking about this fact that you are an interruption to them in some cases, and you need to think about how to contextually raise your hand in those environments and either be with them, work with them, naturally engage with them, or provide that offer of value that's so significant that you're not wasting their time if you do interrupt them. Finding those appropriate moments and relevant ways to really create that awareness and consideration in those spaces that is important to them, if you're going to get that preference to the consumer that gets them to do that action you want so badly.
Yep. And I always feel like our episodes come back to the comical analogy of dating, but you know, a lot of what we talk about is social, and social is relationship based. It's very similar to, it's not that you don't want to go to someone's house once you've started to date them, because you do. You want to meet their parents, you want to, you know, whatever, see where they live, but you're not going to do that at the very beginning. You're going to like meet them at a party where there's a bunch of other people and stuff going on. You're going to meet them on college campus in your class or whatever. It's that same idea of like, I'm going to go to Yelp, or I'm going to go to Instagram. I'm going to go to like these aggregators, these organizers of lots of things, start to whittle down who and what I'm most interested in. And then once I've kind of filtered it, and again, think about the funnel, then I might go over to the .com environment or the, you know, the home of that brand. But I have to first kind of feel it out.
Yeah. I mean, I think about how many times I have to watch The Bachelor. How many episodes do I have to go through before they actually get down to the point where they have the home visits? And there's very few that get there, right? And they start out with like 45 and they end up with 3 that actually go home and meet the family. And that is a classic marketing funnel right there, right? You go all the way from awareness down to the consideration, you get the preference, you're waiting for the action, but you got to meet the parents first.
And more importantly, you just admitted to the entire world that you actually watched The Bachelor.
And The Bachelorette. I have no shame. I have no shame.
Gender equal. Love it. All right. Awesome. So we're going to pause there because there's more to come on numbers. But some key takeaways from this first episode: awareness, engagement, and conversion are 3 primary stages in your consumer's journey, or that funnel that Tuck talked about. And you can build creative and buy paid media with each of these in mind. So whichever one you choose, wherever you think your brand or your product is on that journey, and it might be that they're in different places based on different audiences that you're targeting, but define that upfront and align your measurement and metrics to those goals. Many brands can't attribute digital media directly to sales. Again, whether it's a B2B brand or you're trying just to drive broad love for the brand without necessarily asking for a conversion to sale, that's okay. You can define conversion in lots of different ways. And I think that the notion of looking at measurement as a proxy for brand health is something that we'll talk more about in episode 2, but is another way we can really deconstruct the word conversion so that it doesn't always have to mean buy, buy, buy. So begin with the end in mind. That's the last takeaway. And we'll touch on that again in the next episode. Have your goals, your business goals established up front, and align measurement and digital marketing to those business goals.
Awesome. All right. That is part 1 of our 2-part episode around KPI to your ROI.
Word.
If you haven't signed up for our newsletter, do it at socialcurrencyshow.com. It's the perfect way to get the DL every Monday. And we've been including more meaty content every week, including the latest news and other things we think would be of value to you. On Facebook, you can jump on and check us out, facebook.com/socialcurrencyshow. And whether you're on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Instagram, you can find us as Tuck Ross and Jess Jensen. We appreciate you guys listening. We love you. And Jess, I'm going to talk to you in a little bit.
All right. Bye, Tuck.
See ya.
You just listened to Social Currency, a podcast with Tuck Ross and Jess Jensen. Like what you hear? Subscribe to Social Currency in your favorite podcast app and please leave a review on iTunes. Have a question for the show? Want to ask about a specific topic? Email us at info@socialcurrencyshow.com. If we include it in an upcoming episode, we will send you something awesome. Thanks for tuning in, and remember to check out the full show notes with all the links that we referenced at socialcurrencyshow.com.
Hey guys, it's Tuck again with a quick reminder. If you're looking for Social Currency, we're now available almost on every place you can listen to podcasts, at least that I can find, because I'm trying to get us listed everywhere. So definitely on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, on every Google Player, Stitcher, Alexa. We added a skill there so you can add us to your flash briefing or listen to us through any of the podcast streaming on Alexa. You can also pick us up on multiple podcast apps and check us out on our site, socialcurrencyshow.com. We want you guys to be able to listen to the show however, whenever you feel like it, and get your dose of social currency every week.